Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Well, I must be under the weather a little bit or something because I literally woke up about 20 minutes before the show, and that's okay. Fortunately, I have today off, so I don't have the day job. But this is one of the days that sort of, you know, tests your mettle, as they say, as a radio person, because normally I prep a ton, and I don't have a guest today. I mean, it's just me, and so this is a really great day to join me in conversation. And in fact, I'd welcome it more than you know. This happened, I think, about a year and a half ago. And for the same reason, I wasn't feeling well, which is pretty rare. The last time I wasn't feeling well, I think I had the COVID itself. This would have been a year ago, December. And it's almost a year and a half now. Yeah, about a year and a half ago. And so, you know, I just, the prep that I normally get to do, I didn't do. Although for this particular show, it's kind of a prep that never stops, because the two big issues, and this is why I kind of saved this day, Wednesday, for the two big issues. And we had a great run with Concerned Veterans for America. And that's the group that Michaela Kerwin and Jimmy Smith were representing very well. So if you want to go back and hear their Wednesday editions, it was fabulous. And so Michaela's moved on, and Jimmy, I'm sure we'll hear from Jimmy again soon with Concerned Veterans for America at some point. But I wanted to kind of take Wednesdays to really go over in detail the two biggest issues that are facing us today, and that being the corona, you know, vaccine, which we've defined over and over again, messenger RNA. Okay, it's a gene shot. It's like the Borg. It kind of co-opts your body and makes you, as close to a corporate, automaton as they can get you. And so it's a dangerous thing, I think. I think there's no reason for it for most people. It's dangerous for anybody. But the whole idea of a vaccine for COVID is stupid, because most people by now have either been exposed or or had it. And so if you've been exposed, you didn't get it, it means you got a good immune system, right? And I think everybody's been exposed. And if you had it, then, you've got a good immune system and you've got antibodies, okay? So if I sound a little sluggish this morning, like I say, I wasn't feeling that well yesterday afternoon, evening, and all of a sudden, like I say, well, it makes sense. I woke up, like I say, about 20 minutes before showtime, which normally would cause a panic with people who are newer in the radio biz. But fortunately, I've got a little bit more experience now, and I have so much information that I collect. Wednesday's show, I really start collecting, the Wednesday before, and so I have folders full of articles for both election correction and the virus. So the show's title today, it's called "It's Not the Origin of the Virus, but the Suppression of the Cure." And the reason I picked that title, in fact, it hit me about 2 or 3 days ago when I wrote it down, that I wanted to do this because everybody's looking in the wrong place. And it seems very strange to me that now, this huge push to find the origin of the virus, when we knew the origin of the virus a year ago. Trump knew it. He announced it, over a year ago. We knew the virus came from Wuhan, China, because it was Wuhan, China that published the gene sequence, January what? It was either 11th or 20th. The date's a little fuzzy in my head. But back in January of 2020, China released the gene sequence of COVID. Why? So the vaccine manufacturers could make their messenger RNA vaccines, independent of Trump. And like I say, with the supercomputers and everything else that works the way it works, they already had the virus. They already had the vaccine, the exact messenger RNA vaccine, because they already had the messenger RNA technology. Right? They had that years ago. They had it back in 2017, at least, probably before that. Moderna was formed in 2020. No, wait a minute. This was formed in 2010, excuse me. Like I said, a little fuzzy this morning. Can I give you a chance here? All right. So Moderna, you got my timeline. Moderna is formed in 2010. All right. And that's the company that really led all this stuff. So they developed the technology for creating vaccines, chemical messenger RNA from computer instructions. So instead of actually sitting there, cutting and splicing it themselves, is the computer, you know, creates the code, and then the messenger RNA comes from that. I'm not sure how this works exactly, because I'm not a scientist that much, and I'll investigate that further. Maybe I can talk to Judy Mikovits again, who's been on a couple times now, who I'm still in touch with, along with Dr. Solenko, who I'm still in touch with from the business they've had. Maybe they can explain the process. The closest analogy I can come up with my fuzzy brain right now is, if you remember how movies, when they used to edit movies, all right, they would literally cut and splice. They would cut and tape, and they would take, when they say cut the film, you know, on the editing floor, they literally had film. You know, because film was a movie. If you look at a movie film, it is frame by frame by frame by frame. So you have millions of frames in a full length film. All right, much like they used to do cartoons with an individual drawing. So if you wanted to edit a film, you literally had to get an editing thing, and then they'd have a very sharp knife, and they would literally cut the film. All right, and then they would take a section out, and then they would splice it together. All right. So that's how I think gene sequencing worked in the old days. All right. You would literally cut the gene and you would take another part and you put it in. Okay. So with digital film, they don't have to do that. All right. With digital film, you literally have the film in a digital code. And so you basically just reprogram the scene, or you do the special effects, and you just automatically insert them. And there it is. There's the new film. So what you see is what the computer, you know, recoded. Well, I think messenger RNA is probably equivalent to that. That's the difference. So instead of, you know, literally cutting and splicing the genes the old-fashioned way, there's a computer that writes a gene code, and that code somehow becomes a reality in messenger RNA. So in other words, it goes from the physical code to the chemical code of messenger RNA. Okay, that may not be the best explanation, but it's where we are now, and I'll work on that further as we go. Okay, so you've got this code that goes into your body and changes your DNA, because messenger RNA changes your DNA. So think of DNA, deoxy something new something, ribonucleic acid. There we go. Deoxyribonucleic acid. There we go. DNA. All right. So that's your gene code. All right. Amino acids go to proteins. So it's code. It's the instructions for every cell in your body to make every other cell in your body. You know, it's where all your – it's the instructions that make your body possible, that make life possible, all right? So in order for the code of your body to work, it has to have messengers, you know, to the next cell, you know, from the last cell with the same code, so the next cell is produced the same way with the same code. Otherwise, you know, you get mutations and cancers and all kinds of nasty things, right? So that's how it works. So messenger RNA basically carries the DNA code to the next cell. If messenger RNA is in a, quote, vaccine, which is not a vaccine, it's a gene code, you know, it goes into your body. The idea is that they're making, I guess the idea is to put the stuff into your body that where your body will make the coronavirus cells, so that your body will then see the coronavirus cells as an enemy and attack it, and thereby creating an immunity to it. That to me makes no sense. Okay, because if your body's producing it, where's the guarantee that your body's going to produce it and recognize it as a problem? And see, I think this is where the problem comes in. I think this is the part they assumed, but because they didn't actually test it, you know, long term, you know, the usual 10-15 year study, they just did it. Okay, what they're finding is the proteins themselves, those little spikes, you know, off the end of the cell that they put on there to make these cells, you know, when they designed this virus, you know, attached to your lung cells faster. You know, it's kind of like a plug into a socket kind of thing. Those little protein things are breaking off and causing their own problems, blood clots, you know, damage to organs, death, you know, and so this is what's going on. So worrying about the origin, this is a long way of saying that worrying about the origin of the virus, you know, is kind of stupid at this point, because, like I say, back in January of 2020, China had already published the gene sequence so that their buddies in the vaccine world, and this is all documented, it's in Virology, it's in a bunch of places. I mean, I can find it for you. Well, I do right now, actually, now that I think about it. You know, like I say, I've got all this information on my computer. I just haven't got it. There we go. Let's take that out here. Let's do that here. You're gonna get a lot of this. You're gonna get a lot of vamping, because normally I would have these things all out and ready for you, but in this particular case, I don't. So the two reports today, you know, on the election correction and the not ready for Facebook vaccine, they're kind of going to go back and forth as I think of stuff. So let's go to my early COVID articles. Let's see if I can find it when the gene was released. Some of these files have dozens of articles. Excuse me. I'm just, you know, like I say, it's not the way I wanted to do the show today. I want to have all this stuff out for you. See if I can find it. Well, I'd probably do this anyway because, you know, and I talked about this before. So let's say China releases. Where does China release? If I can't find it quickly, I'll move on here. But I remember where it was. French doctor. Oh, there's my root studies on coronavirus. Yeah, the early articles, the ones that were written between January and like June of 2020, those are the most accurate. After June, everything went crazy because that's when Dr. Fascist clamped down and the lockdown started, the mask mandate started, and people forgot their science and all the information went crazy. And it was all propaganda and it was all fear and it was all nonsense for the most part. All right, so where is – oh, here's a good one too. This is one that people should know about, all right? We talked about this a little bit yesterday on the show. Fauci knew about HCQ, that's hydroxychloroquine, in 2005. Nobody needed to die, okay? So, again, worrying about the origin of the virus is nowhere near as important as worrying about the suppression of the cure. So let me get right to that with this article here, because who suppressed the cure? Well, Dr. Fascist, Dr. Anthony Fauci, and Dr. Birx. And was it Redfield was there when Trump was in office? I don't know who the person is now. Azar, head of the FDA, you know, all the folks who knew that hydroxychloroquine cured COVID, suppressed the cure. Right? All those people on Fox News. Who is that? I can't remember that idiot who wears the thick plastic brim glasses and the, you know, suit and tie all the time, who said, this will kill you. You know, 60 years of hydroxychloroquine. He says, this will kill you. No, it won't. Anyway, so the article is in NE News Now. That's it just says NE News Now is the website. Brian Fisher. So Dr. Anthony Fauci, he says, whose expert advice to President Trump has resulted in the complete shutdown of the greatest economic engine in world history, has known since 2005 that chloroquine is an effective inhibitor of coronaviruses. How did he know this? Because of the research done by the National Institutes of Health, of which he is the director. Whoa, how about that? In connection with the SARS outbreak caused by a coronavirus dubbed SARS-CoV, the NIH, that's the National Institute of Health, researched chloroquine and concluded that it was effective. Should I say that again? Concluded that it was effective at stopping SARS coronavirus in its tracks. The COVID-19 bug is likewise a coronavirus labeled SARS-CoV-2. Okay, so your COVID-19 bug, you know, SARS, first of all, SARS-CoV, well, now called SARS-CoV-1. So the coronavirus we know affectionately as COVID-19 is also known as, the real name is SARS-CoV-2. While not exactly the same as SARS-CoV-1, it is genetically related to it and shares 79% of its genome, as the name SARS-CoV-2 implies. So SARS-CoV, the first SARS-CoV that they created, you know, the next one, SARS-CoV-2, the one that, you know, we know as the pandemic, has 79% of the same DNA as SARS-CoV-1. Okay, so it's not like it's that different, you know. So if SARS-CoV-1 is greatly affected by chloroquine or hydroxychloroquine, SARS-CoV-2 is going to be also. So they knew, right? They're the same genes, 79%, all right? So they, back to the article, they both use the same host cell receptor, which is what viruses use to gain entry to the cell and infect the victim, okay? So if you stop the host cell receptor, which is what hydroxychloroquine does, you shut down the virus. It can't get into your cells. All right, so I mean, it's not rocket science, but it's fairly commonly known science among virologists. All right, the Virology Journal, the official publication of Dr. Fauci's National Institute of Health, published what is now a blockbuster article on August 22nd, 2005. Okay, under the heading, get ready for this, chloroquine is a potent inhibitor of SARS coronavirus infection and spread. Okay, he says, write the researchers, we report that chloroquine has strong antiviral effects on SARS-CoV infection of primate cells. This inhibitory effects are observed when the cells are treated with the drug either before or after exposure to the virus, suggesting both prophylactic and therapeutic advantage. So there you go. So the only way that Dr. Fascist could scream and yell and want to ban hydroxychloroquine is because he knows it works. He knows it works. He knows it worked. And he, oh, I guess I mixed up my words there. He knows it worked back in 2005. And he knows it works now. And he knows it would have worked in 2020 with that little pandemic. Okay. So this is one of the strongest pieces of evidence that the that this wasn't a pandemic, but as Judy Mikovits and Dr. David Martin call it, as Dr. Judy Mikovits too, they call it a plandemic. Okay, so this was planned. The whole thing was planned. In fact, it was so well planned that they denied you the cure. Okay, that's genocide. All right. So when you infect a world with a created virus for the sole purpose of selling vaccines, and you do that by denying the cure, the origin of the virus really doesn't make a whole lot of sense, does it? To spend all your time researching that, okay, because it's already here. Besides, we know where it came from. What really is the question, what really has to be done is to find out why the cure was suppressed, okay? Now, we know why, to sell vaccines, but we need to take it to them, to the Dr. Fascists, all right, to the member of Congress who knew, all right, to the member, the health bureaucrats who knew, to the people in Trump's, you know, lying advisor circle who knew that hydroxychloroquine, when President Trump said hydroxychloroquine, you know, may stop this virus cold and we might be out of this in a few weeks, he was absolutely right, okay? And so, and I have tons of articles that said exactly the same thing, right? Now, some of them have been scrubbed from the internet, but there's still enough left, you know, that you know, you can find out, okay? I'm randomly going through all my articles in my folder here. It's kind of fun. You were talking about improvised radios. Here we go. Virology Journal. Chloroquine is a potent inhibitor of SARS coronavirus infection and spread. This is the very one Dr. Brian Fisher was just talking about. It's right here. Severe acute respiratory syndrome, SARS, is caused by a newly discovered coronavirus, SARS-CoV. You know, no effective prophylactic or post-exposure therapy is currently available. Results. However, we report, however, that chloroquine has strong antiviral effects on SARS-CoV infection of primate cells. Okay, so it's right here. Conclusion, chloroquine is effective in preventing the spread of SARS-CoV in cell culture. Favorable inhibition of virus spread was observed when the cells were either treated with chloroquine prior. Okay, it's exactly what Brian Fisher took out of the article. So it's right here, Virology Journal. You can look at it. Virology Journal, 2005, published online August 22nd, 2005. It's right here. Yeah, don't believe me? Look it up. Chloroquine is a potent inhibitor of SARS coronavirus infection and spread. I should probably say that a little slowly. I'm getting a little excited here. Chloroquine is a potent inhibitor of SARS coronavirus infection and spread. I'll give you my Dennis Prager voice. Okay. Dennis Prager is able to do a show because he only says one word for my 10. Sorry, Dennis. But it's true. Let me be Dennis Prager right now. Coronavirus is a potent inhibitor of SARS coronavirus infection and spread. Oh, chloroquine is a potent inhibitor. There we go. All right. So they knew. And this is the scary part about this. They knew, a whole bunch of people knew. They knew, journalists, politicians, big pharma leaders, you know, all kinds of folks knew that the cure was there. And yet they did nothing. Okay, so they're all guilty, either directly or as accomplices of this Holocaust. I mean, I don't know what else to call it. All right, so the purposeful design of withholding of a cure to a disease so that people will die for the sole purpose of marketing a vaccine that's not needed. I don't know what else you call that. Other than a genocide. You know, you're talking 500,000 here. And then, of course, the problem is we don't know how accurate the numbers are. But it doesn't matter. At what point does something become a genocide? At what point do you say that something, you know, beyond a massacre, all right? If 100 is a massacre, then 500,000 is a genocide? I don't know. I mean, the numbers aren't so much important to me as the concept, as the guilt, as the psychopathic desire for money and the willful withholding of information that would save lives. So these people killed people by suppressing information. Okay. So no, did they go in the night and, you know, go into people's homes and, you know, stab them in the heart? No. But they denied them the cure. They let the virus stab them in the heart or the lungs and do their dirty work for them. So they're no different than the mafia boss who orders a hitman to go kill somebody. All right. They don't do the dirty work themselves, but they're behind it. They're the ones making the decision. the decision to withhold information on the cure is the Holocaust, is the crime against humanity, is something that these people need to go on trial for. And I don't care how old Dr. Fascist is. He needs to account for this. So is everybody else connected with him, including those folks that lied to Trump, you know, the journalists who suppressed the cure, everybody else who suppressed the cure, the doctors that lied. You know, I mean, how far down does this go? You got the medical profession, you got the health bureaucrats, you got the journalists, politicians, and corporate members all conspiring. You want to talk about this? This isn't a theory. This is a definite conspiracy. Because, you know, had the president been able to stand by his guns and break this conspiracy by saying, no, chloroquine works. Really, we've got the evidence. Here it is. And if he had stuck to that, this pandemic would have been over in May of last year, a year ago. That's where we'd be now. All right. Let me I'm going to play a patriotic moment now and get back to what I'm supposed to do this hour, which is the election correction report. So I got a little carried away. I mean, I really well, actually let me play you the preview to the what I do. So this wonderful group, Santa Rosa Volunteers, I met them recently at the rally that was held a couple of weeks ago, the Arise USA rally, which is thrown together pretty quickly. It's supposed to go to Pensacola, but something happened. They couldn't hold it, so they brought it here to Milton. And what was interesting about it was I met some amazing folks, and one of them is the Santa Rosa Volunteers. And so let me play you their – I'm kind of scrolling here. Like I said, this entire show today is improvised. I woke up literally 20 – actually 19 minutes before the show started. So it's made things a little bit hectic today. So let me play you – let me play the explanation of how this all came about. But they've commissioned me to do founding moments of basically all of our founding documents, including all the Federalist Papers, Declaration of Independence, Constitution, et cetera. So let me play this for you. I'll be right back in a couple of minutes and continue on with the election correction report. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. I am proud to announce a new feature of Action Radio. Santa Rosa Volunteers has commissioned me to bring to you an education in our founding documents, one focused subject at a time. Each week, we will have a new presentation drawing from the Declaration of Independence, the Federalist Papers, the Constitution, and who knows, maybe back to Magna Carta. So enjoy learning about your God-given birthright in these vignettes. Share them with your children, your grandchildren, your parents, your friends, in fact, anyone you want to serve, an accessible yet poignant introduction to a lifelong journey in the study and practice of liberty. The whole purpose of these presentations is to inform a generation or two of Americans about the true meaning of our founding. They should have gotten that in school. Since that is not happening, Santa Rosa Volunteers has decided to help change that. If you want to learn more about Santa Rosa Volunteers and maybe get involved, their website is srv1776.com. srv1776.com. Their email is srv1776@protonmail.com. It is their goal to share local community information while encouraging everyone to feel welcomed and informed. Santa Rosa Volunteers says, "Arise, patriots! It is time to take our republic back. The sleeping giant awakens. Arise, patriots, and get involved." Until next time, this is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. All right, so I'll play you the actual one that I wrote for this week in a little bit, probably the top of the hour. So, like I say, things are a little scattered this morning. I wasn't feeling that well, like I said. I'm still not 100%, so I'm just going to take the rest of the day and take it easy. So in the election correction report, this is fascinating what's going on. And so as I've been watching the news overall, and the best coverage, of course, is One American News, you know, on TV. And do I still use the word TV? Or is it video? Whatever. Anyway, so TV news coverage is One American News, and Gateway Pundit is the best one online. By far. I mean, it's just, there's no comparison. So Gateway, I look at my folder here of all the stories I have, and half of them are Gateway Pundit. So Joe Hoft and Jim Hoft, who are twin brothers. Jim's the editor, Joe's, I guess, the publisher. I don't know how they divided up their labor, but they do this site Gateway Pundit, which if you look at it in Wikipedia, they list it as an extremist right-wing conspiracy theorist rag. You know, I don't know if they say rag, but basically that's what they call it, right? So what's happening right now, the Arizona audit is proceeding along very nicely. And, of course, the Democrats are scared to death of that because they know they're guilty. You know, the irony of the election, excuse me, the election correction is that the people who know the most about it are the ones who did it. They're the ones who are the most trying to stop it. So if you want to know who was the most deeply involved with the election fraud, look at the ones who are most speaking against it, taking action against it, having lawsuits against it, you know, complaining, saying they're not real, they're not official, they're not nationally certified, they're a bunch of frauds, yada yada. You know, those are the folks that committed the fraud, and that would be the Secretary of State of Arizona, Democrat. And now I was watching a report last night; it was really interesting. I haven't seen him for a while either. Oh, I forgot his name, Eric Holder. There we go. Right. So Eric Holder, the former Attorney General of Fast and Furious fame, who thought it was a neat idea to let guns be sold illegally, you know, from American gun stores or sort of released without, I guess, background checks or things like that, hoping they end up in Mexican cartels, which of course they did. And then they figured those would be used against Americans, those guns, and then they could trace them and say, aha, see? You know, gun control. We need more gun control because these guns are getting, you know, being sold from gun stores and put in the hands of criminals, you know, and they're killing Americans. Well, of course, one of the Americans who was killed was Brian Terry, who was a border guard. All right. That's Eric Holder. Okay. So Eric Holder basically killed Brian Terry. I mean, I might as well just say it. All right. It's not a direct connection, but he caused the events whereby, you know, Brian Terry lost his life with an American gun store gun, you know, from, you know, that was sold as part of this Fast and Furious operation, because they figured in their arrogance they could track these guns and, you know, and make American gun owners look bad and look like criminals, so they could take guns from American gun owners. I mean, that's the purpose of the left. You know, the purpose of the left is to increase the gun ownership by government and decrease the gun ownership by you. Okay. Well, that's the Second Amendment in reverse, all right, where the government has the right to any gun they want and can't be touched. And the people have no rights whatsoever. I mean, that's how the left views the Constitution, which is why they're so dangerous. You know, the crazy thing about the times that we live in is that if we didn't have a left, excuse me, voice is a little low off today. If we didn't have a left, just think of the problems that we wouldn't have. Okay, you wouldn't have an indoctrination in education. You wouldn't have an illegal alien problem. You wouldn't have gun control. Oh, you'd still have spending in government, but it wouldn't be anywhere near as bad as the trillions that these people are just, you know, spending like water, you know, over a waterfall. Yeah, there's so many problems that we wouldn't have if we didn't have a left. This would be a pretty cool country. You know, if most people believed in American values, American patriotism, individualism, rugged individualism, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, people left each other alone. They didn't look at everybody in terms of race, which most of us don't. We just see people as people, and we see, you know, most people see people as Americans and, you know, visitors, you know, tourists. And that's how most people look at people in this country, all right? You know, people go to work every day with people of every different race, religion, color, you know, ethnic background, language background, and we do our jobs and we get along fine. You know, if we didn't, wouldn't there be mass warfare, you know, in every factory and office building in America? If racism were that big a problem, you know, wouldn't we all be at each other's throats? Wouldn't there be mass violence? Wouldn't there be gangs? Wouldn't there be racial gangs in the streets? You know, like there are in prisons. Of course, they do that for their protection. That's a different story because prisons are an artificial environment. But think about it. I'm rambling now, but this is how it works sometimes. But if we were that racist a country, wouldn't there be roving gangs of white people and black people and, you know, for the sole purpose of, you know, enforcing their racial prejudice? Okay. There would be, but in some ways you have, you know, Black Lives Matter, Antifa and the neo-Nazis, which are all national socialist leftist organizations. So in that respect you do. So in other words, you get rid of the left, you get rid of the racism. That's the ironic part about it. Anyway, so I found this article, Gateway Pundit. Like I said, I've got a lot of time to ramble today. So if you're sick of me rambling already, feel free to call the show, 215-383-3832. We're going to be guest driven, I hope, especially in the second hour. Let me get this story out in the first hour. Every state should be audited. North Carolina results don't make sense. Appear likely impossible. All right. So that's the headline. Joe Hoff published June 8th. And so he says very clearly here, this is so we're into the election correction report. He says, early in the morning of November 4th, 2020, one day after the election, it looked like President Trump was the winner in North Carolina. Well, because he was. Back to the article. Today, a reader shared with the Gateway Pundit unlikely results once the ballots were finally counted and certified. In September 2020, North Carolina joined Michigan and Pennsylvania in allowing voting to continue for up to 9 days after the election. We knew then that this state was in jeopardy of being stolen in the 2020 election. Yeah, the only reason you continue the election beyond the election is to steal it. Okay, so if you have one winner, you know, who you don't want, then you change results until you get the winner that you do want. That's what happens. Right. So I got one of these little gateway pundit flashes here. It says North Carolina. Okay, there we go. I just read that. All right. So on election day, we reported On election day, we reported that voting hours were extended in North Carolina at 4 voting sites due to voting machine errors at those locations. Gee, I wonder how that came about. Yeah, voting machine errors? Oh, please. At this point, we had no idea of, who the voting machine companies were around the country or their importance. Yeah, that would be Dominion. All right. Okay, so... here's another trend. I'll get to this in a little bit, that 3 different states are touring the Arizona audit right now. I know that's Pennsylvania, Georgia. I think Wisconsin's the 3rd one. Okay. Anyway, so here's another little snippet in these articles here. North Carolina extends voting hours at 4 sites. North Carolina extended the hours at 4 different precincts after technical problems with voting machines delayed the opening of the polling sites. State policy prohibits election results from being released until all polls are closed, so North Carolina's vote totals won't be released until after 8:15 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And this is the State Board of Elections. Okay, so another snippet of the article. Then on back to the article here. If you ever read a Gateway Pundit article, you see why I have confusion, because they have little boxes, and it's kind of hard to read sometimes. Their format is challenging. Anyway, it says then on election night, North Carolina reported 100% of the precincts were reported, but then later the state claimed only 94% were complete. Okay, article goes on. Next, we learned that North Carolina Board of Elections voted to allow individuals to fix ballots after the election. Oh, gee, no possibility of fraud there. So it says, here we go, another little box. Outrageous. Turncoat GOP Elections Board members resign in North Carolina after siding with Democrats on fixing flawed ballots. Do you know what fixing a flawed ballot means? It means it turns a Trump ballot into a Biden ballot. That's what that means, all right? The article says the 2 turncoat Republican members of North Carolina's State Elections Board resigned after allowing Democrats to fix flawed ballots in the state. Blindsided GOP Elections Board members in North Carolina resigned in protest over irregular absentee ballots. Democrats insisted on letting voters fix certain witness information problems by filling out an affidavit instead of starting a what? New ballot? Okay. Then they send me to another website. It says, you people, you got to get your phone instead of filling out an affidavit instead of starting a new ballot from scratch. Raymond and okay. All right. So what these Republicans should have done, it wasn't resign, but blow the whistle. That's what they should have done. They should have gone national with this news and said, you're not going to believe what's going on in North Carolina. All right? I got Josie in line. Josie, I'll get to you in just a bit. It says here, the results were eventually called for President Trump more than a week after the election. However, one observer noted some unreasonable events in the state's final results, and he shared this with the Gateway Pundit. He says, I guarantee there were massive fraud here in North Carolina. There was massive fraud here in North Carolina. I have lived in Orange County, which is heavily Democrat, especially with the University of North Carolina and Duke University in the south part of the county for a decade. There is no way that North Carolina went for President Trump at the same time Democrat Roy Cooper got elected as well. Huh. Now, see, I'm curious about that. All right. So now I'm confused. Where did North Carolina go? All right. This is confusing for me. Orange County was 75% for Biden. Durham County, 80% for Biden. You look at the rest of the state. No other county got above 67%, not even huge Charlotte or Wake County. The state went for Senator Tillis, Republican. This is what happens when you improvise radio, folks. I'm going to get lost in all these percentages. Let me get to Joseph here. But the point is that North Carolina was a fraud election because they extended voting hours. They let people vote 9 days, up to 9 days after the election. And they allowed for the fixing and auditing and the curing or whatever they call it. They changed votes that they think people voted for. And then they had other people fill out affidavits that, I voted this way. You know, so it's a mess. Josie, good morning. Welcome to my improvised last minute show again.
Hey, good morning. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning.
believe that in every state of the United States, they cheated. And they've been doing this for years and years and years. They didn't cheat it enough in the Republican states, so it doesn't look obviously. They need to investigate every state of the United States on their votes, especially the ballots that came in. Sniper in Broward County, Brenda Sniper, she's been helping cheating in Florida for so many years. And what did they do? They retired her instead of put her in prison. And she should be in jail instead of getting $700,000 a year of retirement money. It is corrupt. And all California and New York City turned red. And they should be investigating New York also.
Well, I think all of it should be investigated. I think the entire 2020 election should be audited. Every state has to go through an audit.
All of it.
You know, and here's the thing, too. I was thinking about this the other day. People keep talking about the election is over, although I noticed Dan Ball on One American News, he calls him Mr. Biden, which is not president, but Mr., which is kind of funny, actually. He doesn't even call him Senator. He calls him Mr. And so I might adopt that term. Yeah. So Mr. Biden, the occupant in the White House, you know, who has no business being there. Oh, yeah, that whole thing has to be audited. But you remember when we talked about outvoting the vote fraud? Basically, that's what happened.
Yeah.
The Trump voters voted in such a huge proportion. Mike Lindell said this, too, that we caught them. Because they were caught, you know, they would have lost again by an even bigger amount than they lost in 2016. And so this is when they had to really cheat, you know, more than they were planning on cheating, you know, and because of that, that's how we caught them. But you know when something is going on, they say there's an ongoing investigation. We can't comment on this. It's not done yet. Okay. So, you know, so isn't this election really an ongoing investigation? Shouldn't that have the same, you know, results that you can't have a conclusion yet? We don't really know what happened, you know, as far as the who won, because there's an ongoing investigation. I mean, we know who won, but with these audits going on right now, it's an ongoing investigation. So why is Biden allowed to do anything? Why doesn't he wait for the results of the audit? Yeah.
Yeah. No, this is corrupt. You see, people thought the United States was very good country. I mean, it is one of the best countries in the world, but people didn't think, oh, there was no fraud, no cheating and all that. We're a perfect country and all that. And this only happens in all the corrupt Latino and Middle East and all those other countries. But it's been going on for years, for the last 70 years here.
Well, as
and
long as you have parties.
We did not know how bad it was.
Yeah. As long as you have parties, you have corruption. You know, I mean, there's still the Kennedy election where it's assumed that Kennedy won because his father stole, or Mayor Daley in Chicago, you know, basically rigged the election in that one particular city. And so that's what put Kennedy over the top. Ironically, I'm glad he won, you know, over Nixon. But when you think about it, yeah. So the cheating's been going on for a long time. All elections have cheating because people aren't honest. You know, when it comes to power and money, people aren't honest. So you're always going to have cheating. But do you have enough cheating to?
And they were talking about it also, including fights like Muhammad Ali and all these people. They've been rigging fights and football games. They've been rigging everything just for money. These people are so corrupt. And this has to stop. This has to stop completely.
Well, there was a baseball scandal. I think the 1919 World Series was thrown, you know, and I think that's when they had it. And so I don't believe that all sports is so corrupt that otherwise nobody would bet on it. There's corruption in everything. Right? Anytime there's power and there's money involved, there's corruption. Because there's always greedy people that want more.
What's happening is, the mafia, we think the mafia disappeared, but it hasn't disappeared. The mafia is still here. And we've been talking about it with my family members for a long time. The mafia never left. So the mafia for Planned Parenthood is the Clintons and the Biden. And they're behind all this Planned Parenthood. Yeah, they make so much money. It's a money-making machine. So they're here. And That's why when one of our close friends' brother-in-law, he went to jail for 2 years, and I told the story on your show one time, mm-hmm. and the mafia came and blackmailed him to steal over $1 million in our association condominium place in Miami. And the guy went to jail for 2 years, and he couldn't tell who came and blackmailed him for that money. And it's been going on with a lot of businesses, a lot of things in this country.
Yeah. So no, I mean, it's still, I mean, there's organized crime, there's mafia, there's many different organized crime families, organized businesses. I believe the Democrat Party is an organized crime syndicate because that's how they stole the election, you know, and the Republicans, I think if they could have cheated, they would, but they're not really good at it. You know, they're sort of like the incompetent younger brother who wants to play with the big boys, but they just never quite get there. There's corruption everywhere, but I don't think it's as widespread in every area of our life as what you're talking about here. But we know, all of us who've been watching this know, that what happened in 2020 was stealing of the election. You know, anybody who knows, yep. and like I said, the Democrats know the best because they did it. And they're acting as such. Yep. That's why Eric Holder is trying to have the Justice Department now not only shut down this audit in Arizona, but shut down all audits. You know, and these are the same people that 2 years ago said we have to investigate President Trump because we think he might be colluding with Russia. They have no evidence of anything. So when it is in their interest to use the Justice Department, you yeah. know, to investigate for the sole purpose of destroying, they do that. When it's in the interest to shut down an investigation for the sole purpose of destroying, they do that. So anytime they want to destroy something else, they either investigate or stop somebody else from investigating. That's the pattern.
Everything that they have accused President Trump of doing, that's exactly what they are doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let me get to another
story. So here's something encouraging. Back to Gateway Pundit. And this is a huge development from June 8th, once again. Three different states tour the Arizona audit floor. More are expected every day this week. So think about all the states that are going. And there's big red letters. This is a huge development. Representatives from Georgia, Alaska, and Colorado toured the facility. This is really cool. Okay. On Tuesday morning, one American News, Christina Bob, one of my favorites, reported that delegations from Georgia, Alaska, and Colorado are inside Veterans Memorial Coliseum, for a tour of the historic Arizona audit process. This is historic. This has never happened before. Mm-hmm. We're pioneering here, which makes it fun. She says they are now, or Gateway Pundit says they are now on the floor for a deep dive into this process and its logistics. So other states are learning how to audit the way Arizona's auditing. So the mistakes they made in Arizona, you know, they're not going to have to make in the other states because they've already done this. So they know what works. So these other audits will be coming, you know, faster and better. Gateway Pundit says Monday that Georgia would tour the Veterans Memorial Coliseum and more states were expected to follow. Okay. They said legislators from these three states received a, quote, classroom-style briefing and are now on the floor to see firsthand how this process is run. These lawmakers are analyzing the audit to make any fixes necessary and implement a similar process at home. This is really exciting. Gateway mm-hmm. Pundit's Jordan Conradson, that's a new name for me, spoke with Senate liaison Ken Bennett for another update for the guests arrived on the floor. Conradson says, I understand Georgia is in the House right now. Ken Bennett, he's the one you see on TV on One American News all the time. Really good guy. I think he's a Democrat, too, which is interesting. Ken Bennett says, there is a couple of legislators from Georgia and one from Alaska that are in the building right now. This is from June 8th, so yesterday. I've heard Virginia. I've heard Wisconsin. You've told me Colorado, Nevada, who were in a few days ago, Pennsylvania last week. He says, it's becoming a popular place. You know, Conradson says, are you expecting to have, you know, over the next few days more tours? And Bennett says, I told, he says, I'm, this is in red letters, so this must be important. He says, I'm told that every day this week, there is some elected official coming in from some state. Today is Tuesday, so it was yesterday. And if that pattern continues, we'll have somebody in Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Conrad says it looks like they're starting to max out the forensic tables, correct? Bennett says, we are beyond 80%, I'm told, as far as counting the ballots, which is the first step. Then it goes to the paper evaluation. That's what I'm really interested in, okay? And they are well behind in counting levels in paper evaluation. I'm told that we'll probably be finished with the counting of the ballots by the end of this week, which is really encouraging, or sooner, and then all of the resources will shift to the paper evaluation. You can already see that paper evaluation has been increased significantly. There are now 32 working tables and another probably 16 positions on the floor awaiting equipment and things like that. Once the counting is over this week, at some time, all resources will shift to the paper evaluation. Okay? You know we're talking about paper evaluation, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Let me let folks know who might not be know exactly what we're talking about. And anybody who wants to call in, again, 215-383-3832. There's no guests, no reports. It's just me, and it's just me and Josie right now. One of the most interesting things that came out of the Jenna Ellis and Rudy Giuliani hearings all across the states right after the election, there was this guy, I think his name was Conrad Pulitzer. Maybe I don't have his first name right. But he was one of these big-eyed, frizzy-haired science guys. He's one of these science geeks. Okay, he was detailing, and he's involved with this. He knows everything about paper ballots. He has these scanning machines, and he can tell when a paper ballot's been folded. He can tell the kind of paper the paper ballot is, whether it's real election paper. He can tell the ink that was used. He can tell whose fingerprints have been on it. He can tell if that fingerprint is of somebody who smokes or not. I mean, this is how he can tell whether the ink is domestic ink or foreign ink. He can tell whether the signatures are real by hand or whether they're done by machine. He can tell whether done with a felt pen, a ballpoint pen. I mean, he can tell, you know, the quality of everything. So this is what they're doing. They're scanning these ballots.
Even if the ballot been folded or not, to go in the mail or not.
Oh, yeah.
It's so good.
Oh, yeah. He can tell postmarks. He can tell envelopes. He can tell signature matches. He can tell, ballots that are real, ballots that were sent out, ballots that weren't sent out. He can tell ballots that were just brought in by truck. He can tell everything. See, paper absorbs. People forget paper absorbs. It's wood. Mm-hmm. Paper absorbs everything, all right? So it absorbs fluids. It absorbs particles in the air. It absorbs ink. It absorbs anything on your fingers. Paper's like a sponge, okay? So paper's really great to analyze. And what these idiots forgot is that all this forensic evidence, you know, CIA, where's William Peterson? He should be doing this right now. And now the election results, we have the paper ballot. Let me tell you exactly how we analyze the paper. But every aspect of the ballot itself, including the envelope, you know, if it was a mail back absentee ballot in a ballot envelope, it had to be folded. That's the only way it would fit in the envelope. All right. So all these absentee ballots that weren't folded are frauds. Well, they forgot that little tidbit. They can tell if the ballots have been in a suitcase, like in Georgia. You know, they can tell all this stuff. So I mean, the counting is really interesting. I mean, but see, the counting isn't as critical to me because, well, I mean, it is. But, if they've got the numbers, they got the fudging, they're going to find the counting from the Dominion voting machines. That's where the real analysis of the counting is going to be. It's not counting the ballots, because if you're counting fraud ballots, that's a problem. So what they have to do is count the real ballots, and I'm sure that's what they're doing, you know, in Georgia. We'll find out when the report comes out. It's going to be fascinating. This is going to be hours. I'm sure Lindell's going to do a 3-hour special, you know, just on the Arizona audit. But the paper, the ballots themselves, this is what is so fascinating to me. I didn't know anything about this. This is just a really great time. All right, so before I get to my next article, any particular?
We knew about the paper, the specialty, the quality of the paper. We knew it because we were told. Hugh's been talking about it, and we knew about all this. And Donald Trump knew exactly, and I know a lot of people don't agree with me, but the intelligent military, they've been behind this whole thing. And
I don't agree with you. You're right. That's okay.
The reason the Patriots are so patient, waiting, because we know how it's going to end. We win at the end.
See, I don't. I mean, yeah, I want. I know we're going to win at the end, but I don't want the military involved in this at all. The military has nothing to do with this. You know,
they've been
the last
planning
people you
this
want.
For a long time, sweetie.
Well, yeah, I know you say that. I know we disagree on that.
Well,
but I see.
You'll
see, if it was that well planned, they shouldn't have let it happen. Because look what's happened. You know, I mean, it's nice to catch the bad guys, but it's more important to prevent the suffering. If they really knew what was going on, then they would have gotten out there and said, chloroquine cures, you know, COVID, this pandemic's over. And they would have saved all those lives and saved all that suffering and saved all those kids from being sent out of school and saved the suicides, saved the families, saved the mask wearers, saved the paranoid, but saved it from all this. So they really knew what's going on.
I know.
That's what they would have done.
I know.
Okay. If they really knew what was going on, you know, to, in other words, the cure is worse than the disease. Okay. So the cure, yes, we arrest them. Yes, we put them all in jail. But that's nowhere near as important as having had Trump in office continuing from when he, you know. So in other words, he should have been inaugurated January 20th. Okay. Regardless of, the thieves, we'll catch the thieves eventually. You can still catch them even if Trump wins. You know, and Trump is inaugurated. In other words, Trump did not have to be kicked out of office in order to catch the guilty for trying to, you know, it's not stealing an election and winning that makes you a criminal. It's the act of trying to steal the election in the first place. Okay. So in other words, attempted murder is just as serious crime as murder. The fact that you didn't murder somebody doesn't mean you're any less guilty because your intent was to murder somebody. If your intent is to steal the election and you take measures to steal the election, if you don't steal the election, you're still just as guilty of election fraud. Okay. So this is why I don't understand the logic of waiting and having Trump kicked out. This is why I disagree with you. Okay.
You don't agree, but it's okay. That's okay.
Well, I know it's okay. That's fine.
You're going to hear it all.
Okay, and that's fine too.
Look,
listen, folks, you know,
for you to arrest everyone, you have to let it go, let it happen. Because if not, you're only going to arrest a few, and many, many will be arrested, many. And that's look at right now in Washington, D.C., there's a lot of cops. There's a lot of people resigning because they know what's coming. They know what's coming.
Oh, yeah, the rats are jumping the ship, as they say. Yeah. See, to me, it's not as important to arrest everybody as it is to get the leaders who we know, you know, Obama, Clinton, you know, Biden, Harris.
They will.
But here's the thing, though. Think about this. If we had Trump in office, we would not have had the southern border crisis. We would not have had Hamas launching missiles into Israel. We would not have had. We would have had the Keystone Pipeline. We would have had the wall. We would have had a fabulous economy. We would be out of COVID by now because, you know, hopefully Trump would have fired Dr. Fascist, you know, and gotten good advisors and eventually, well, I don't know. You know, that's still, the jury's still out on whether Trump would have done the right thing because he's still talking about vaccines. So all these things that would have happened and wouldn't have happened would have made our lives infinitely better. We'd still be at $2 gasoline. We'd still be energy independent. We'd be a lot stronger in the world. China would still would be restrained instead of open everywhere. We wouldn't have the Russians wouldn't have the European oil pipeline. You know, all these different things that have happened.
I don't think
it's worth arresting people for all those events to happen. I just don't. It would have been better if those events hadn't happened, even if people got away, you know, with not being arrested. That's my contention.
Yeah, but see, you have to let it fall. You have to let all these things happen in order for the left to wake up. And many are still not going to wake up. But a lot of them are waking up, and they're moving here. They're fleeing from the destruction that they have created. And in order, there's so many people, including George Bush, he's going to be arrested. Obama's going to be arrested. A lot of these people are going to be arrested because they're all behind this whole thing. And George Soros should be one of the first ones arrested. Fauci's going to be arrested. Oh, yeah.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, he's a war criminal. He's crimes against humanity.
Yeah.
He's led a Holocaust by denying the information that could have saved, you know, pretty much everybody that got COVID. You know,
people say they should fire Fauci. No, that's not what we want to see. He should be in prison. Who knows what else might happen to him.
No, I'm with you on that.
Coming.
But not just Fauci, but they need to go through. And here's what I do want to see people
all
arrested. Everybody that knew in the government who was in a position to do something about it, all the people that could have been whistleblowers, now I wouldn't arrest all of them, but we need to fire them. All the people in government that knew that chloroquine kills COVID and did nothing and just watched this Holocaust happen to this country, those are the folks that need to be fired and at a certain point arrested. If they're in a leadership position in our health bureaucracies, FDA, CDC or NIH, if they're in a leadership position and they knew that COVID could be cured by hydroxychloroquine and they said nothing and they let that Holocaust happen, then they need to be arrested for crimes against humanity.
Yeah.
That's where
you need to
go with that.
You know that daughter and mom that they were inside that room cheating with the vote? She's been subpoenaed, that young girl. So there's a lot happening, but you don't hear it on the news.
What happened to her?
A lot.
What happened to her, you're saying?
They subpoenaed her already. They subpoenaed her.
Well, they know who she is.
So,
there's only four people in the room.
Because the fake news doesn't report anything. And
well, I don't worry about them.
Going on.
You know, it's not my concern to worry about the fake news. My concern is to get people to the real news, us. Let me do. I'm going to do one more story here in the election correction report. I'm going to take a break. I'm going to play my overly long 7-minute, presentation on Federalist 46, and then we'll get back. We'll talk vaccines in the second hour.
I'm going to be listening to you because I have to get ready. Okay, George. God bless.
God bless you too. Okay, thanks for calling. I really appreciate it.
Bye.
Yeah. Even if we disagree, which we do. Bye now. Yeah. Again. Well, yeah, I mean, Josie and I are best friends, so disagreeing is no problem on this show.
Yeah,
trust me,
are.
it's never an issue. But you'd think so by listening to us. Ah, they hate each other now. No, it's not true. All right,
we don't.
So I found this. This is from the news. Big League Politics is another news source I've discovered recently. Big League Politics, part of our election correction report, says over 500 Georgia Republicans urge Governor Brian Kemp, loser, to conduct a forensic audit into last year's election results. Right. This is from June 3rd, so it's a little bit old, but still within the week. Article says over – who wrote this? Come on, guys. Tell me who wrote this. June 3rd. I guess it's just they're not going to give me an author. I'll probably find one at some point. Let's just say it came from Big League Politics, so at least you know the source. And they say over 500 Republicans in the state of Georgia have signed a letter urging Governor Brian Kemp, loser, to conduct a forensic audit into the 2020 election results. The letter is signed by 531 Republican precinct leaders, grassroots activists, and delegates to the upcoming Georgia GOP convention, demands for an independent forensic audit to take place through the convening of a special session. I think this is Vernon Jones who's behind a lot of this. And they're not talking about just, Atlanta, whatever the county is. Is it Fulton County? I think it's the big one where all the Democrats hang out and cheat. I think they're looking for the whole state. This is really interesting. Quote, we believe that anyone who has a problem with a statewide forensic audit in Georgia has something to hide. As the letter says, our goals are simple. We want to discover the underlying problems that occurred last year and ensure that we never make those same mistakes again. Yeah, see, this is good because the biggest problem that I have with all these Republicans, the twiddlies, the little bureaucrats, the minions, they're around saying, we'll get them next time. The biggest danger of Republicans is this whole idea of we'll get them next time because, A, no, you won't. And even if you do, you're not going to do anything with the power you do get. So why bother? So that's why I unregistered from the Republican Party. The GOP, as far as I'm concerned, that stands for Gelding Old Party, GOP, the Gelding Old Party, because they don't do anything. There's no point in giving them power because they're not going to do anything with it. They're going to give it back to the Democrats. They're going to get like a Paul Ryan, a speaker, or they're going to get, let's just speculate, all right, that the Republicans win the midterms, that they actually manage to suppress enough vote fraud, they actually get the balls to retake the House, okay? So who are they going to appoint as speaker? Hopefully, I guess it's going to be Kevin McCarthy, but is he going to be the leader? Is he going to be, is he going to represent the people? Or is he going to become a deep state twiddly bought and paid for and basically suppress all the things that the Republican Congress should do? That's what Paul Ryan did. Okay. There was no Republican Congress when Paul Ryan was there. It was basically in name only, Republican Congress that was basically controlled by Democrats, even though the Democrats were the minority. Fascinating. All right. So back to this here. So there's no point in putting Republicans in unless they're going to do something. But at the state level, it might be different. And this is why it's fascinating to look at this. The article says these Republicans are making the argument that, quote, many in Georgia did not have the right to know that your vote counted because elected officials in both parties mishandled the 2020 presidential election. And as a result, the integrity of that election is in question. Huh. That's an interesting argument that both parties. Okay, fine. Well, there we go. Ah, my hero. Representative Vernon Jones, a defector from the Democrat Party, who will be challenging Kemp for governor, and Tea Party leader Debbie Dooley, who I'm not familiar with, organized the letter. Kemp, I thought Vernon Jones was behind it. Debbie Dooley, there's a new name, so let's put that in our little watch list. Let's see what Debbie Dooley does. I just like saying that. Let's see what Debbie Dooley does. Don't mind me. A little sleep, stomach bug or something, whatever. Anyway, I'm not feeling that great today. I mean, it's not bad. I mean, obviously I can do the show, but this will be probably another big day of rest. All right, so Debbie Dooley organized the letter. That's the Governor Kemp, the temporary governor, Brian Kemp. Office is arguing the fraud that occurred in 2020 should not be investigated for the purposes of moving forward. See, this is why he's going to lose, okay? A, because he basically listened to Stacey Abrams and let her completely run all over him. And B, because I don't think he believes that, there's enough vote fraud to worry about, okay? Well, I mean, you know, whether somebody steals a dollar from a bank or $1 million from a bank, you know, they still robbed the bank. Right? So does it matter the difference? You know, these people are saying, well, it's only a little bit of vote fraud, so it's really not important. You know, if it's a lot of vote fraud, you know, then we have to worry about it. Okay, then it's a crime. No, nonsense. You know, you don't have to change the election to make vote fraud the crime. You don't have to bankrupt the bank by stealing money from the bank to make you guilty of being a bank robber. All you have to have done is steal money from the bank. You know, people use an analogy, a very simple analogy. People go, oh, yeah, that makes sense. All right. Here we go. So this last quote, it says, to ensure that it is easy to vote and hard to cheat in Georgia, Governor Kemp was proud to sign SB 202 into law. Mallory Blount, Kemp's press secretary, said to the Washington Examiner, which broke the story of the Georgia Republican's letter. Okay, so there you go. All right. So there's more to it. You know the Georgia law. That's the one that Koch and Delta objected to, morons. You know, and all those other different problems. All right, so let's, you can always go, we'll follow up on Georgia later. Georgia's got problems. But at least Georgia is there, you know, in Arizona watching what's going on. So let's see what happens. So you've got the way this looks in most states, right? Here's the pattern I see. You've got the governor. If they're a Democrat, they're against the audits. If they're a Republican, they're for the audits. You got the state legislatures. If they're Democrat legislatures, they're against the audits. If they're Republican, they're for the audits. The judge is pretty much the same thing. So you've got, this is very partisan because the Democrats, you know, are the ones who stole the election. So they're the ones using the legal system every way possible to stop the investigation that'll prove that they stole the election. That's what this is all about, right? The Republicans are finally, at the state level at least, are getting the balls to stand up and say, no, we're going to investigate this. Arizona led the way, okay? God bless Arizona. You know, because they were the first ones to really start doing something about this. All right. Now, all the other states are like, well, we better do this, too, because they're getting pressure from their citizens who are pressuring their Republicans to say, wait a minute, we had vote fraud, too, and we want an audit. OK, so now everybody's curious. So this is kind of snowballing. All right. So this is going to go through the process. And we've got till the midterms. So what is it? 22 months the ballots have to be kept. You know, how many months are we after the election? Let me see. November, December, January, March, April, May, June. We're only 7 months. Okay, after the November election. Well, if you count November, it's 8 months, all right? So they have to be kept for 22 months. Well, that's over 2 years. Well, it's almost 2 years. Too much short of 2 years, okay? So we're not even a year out from the election. So we've got another year. So we get from now to November plus another year. Maybe till August of 2022. August of 2022. To analyze this election and find out if it was, you know, fraud. And even then, once you have an ongoing investigation, then, of course, all the deadlines go away, right? You know, so you have it's like, what's a good example? I guess the IRS. If you have a statute of limitations on investigating you, you know, they have 3 years to catch you making some kind of error, all right? But if they find that error within 3 years, they don't stop it and only going back 3 years. They can go back, you know, 10 or whatever, or 12 or whatever, however far they have to go back. Same thing with a criminal. If there's a statute of limitations on a crime, you know, once they've identified somebody, you know, and then they're a suspect and they're arrested and they're in the process, then the statute of limitations goes away, even though they're not convicted. You know, the process, once the process starts, okay? So the process has started with these election reforms, with these election audits. And so, you know, all the clocks are gone. Time, you know, the statute, the limitations on when they can investigate has already stopped because they're already investigating. See how this works? Anyway, let me play you something here that I made a little too long. I won't do this again. I've realized the error of my ways that you can't do an entire Federalist paper necessarily in one short 3-minute description. But let me play this for you, and it should make. Let me even play the first one for you too. I kind of like that one as well. That one's only a couple minutes long on the Declaration of Independence. Let's we'll make this kind of a patriotic day, and I'll come back and we'll talk vaccines and Dr. Fascist and other you know crimes against humanity. So let me play this, and I'll be right back. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, SRV1776.com. That's SRV1776.com. A caller last week brought up Federalist number 46. This is from the Federalist Papers, which are a series of essays written by our founders explaining and arguing for the ratification of the Constitution. Federalist number 46 was written by James Madison, published Tuesday, January 29th, 1788, and addressed to the people of the state of New York. The caller said this is the Federalist Paper that gives power to the idea that the states and the people could take up arms to control the federal government if they exceeded their legitimate delegated powers in controlling the states and the people. Not specifically to this caller, but there are those who view our situation in the extreme of either ballots or bullets. In other words, if the electoral process doesn't produce good government, then maybe, as Jefferson once said, the tree of liberty has to be refreshed with the blood of patriots and tyrants. The question, though, is when such force should be undertaken. The founders saw force as a last resort and limited to the force necessary to preserve liberty. In the case of England, after all other measures were exhausted, the only possible resolution was total war, a war that was forced upon us. That was the exception until the total war between the states. We will consider that in a separate episode. The title of Federalist 46 is The Influence of the State and Federal Governments Compared. Madison determined that the states would have more natural affinity to the people because of the closer connections in a state versus the distant federal government, unless the federal government proves the better and more popular government to the states. I don't think Madison would have said that if he had any idea how far the federal government has illegally exceeded the powers delegated to it by the states in the Constitution. Nor would he have predicted the move and acceptance towards a national government, which is top-down, as opposed to federal, which has co-equal yet competing parts. Regarding the use of arms, as the caller mentioned, Madison said, "The only refuge left for those who prophesy the downfall of the state governments is the visionary supposition that the federal government may previously accumulate a military force for the projects of ambition." In other words, the states can stand against the feds unless you believe the feds will raise an army to rule the states. To counter any such imagined fear, Madison said, "Let a regular army, fully equal to the resources of the country, be formed, and let it be entirely at the devotion of the federal government." Still, it would not be going too far to say that the state governments, with the people on their side, would be able to repel the danger. This supposes that there is no gun control. The states have command of the National Guard, and that the federal government is still subordinate to the states and actually complies with the limitations of the Constitution. Unfortunately, none of that is true today. Madison also says, besides the advantage of being armed, which the Americans possess over the people of almost every other nation, the existence of subordinate governments to which the people are attached and by which the militia officers are appointed forms a barrier against the enterprises of ambition more insurmountable than any which a simple government of any form can admit of. Again, the federal government and the national military is huge, especially when state national guards are federalized, and that combination is way more powerful than any state militia or militia of the people, which is not to say they will be used against the states or the people, but they could. And then the question of who and how many would participate is opened up. Clearly, Madison believed that the power of the states, combined with the people, were, as this country was designed, way more powerful than the federal government, and that in itself would be more than enough to preclude any action by the feds to reduce the power of either the states or the people. The mistake Madison could not foresee was the explosive growth of the federal government resulting from such unconstitutional policies as a federal income tax and a host of unconstitutional powers that the federal judiciary has refused to declare unconstitutional. This is why at Action Radio we push a policy of defense equality, where no unit of any government or law enforcement entity is better armed than the people in their jurisdiction. And that covers a town and their local police, or a nation and all the armed agents and departments of the federal government, including especially the FBI. The answer to the caller's question is not to take Federalist number 46 and use that as the motivation to build up arms to control the federal government or use the arms in that fashion. The real answer is to disarm the federal government of all weapons, agents, agencies, and departments not specifically authorized by the Constitution. That would be the entire federal government except for the military, which we want to be armed as well as possible to defend this nation. Our greatest danger is not from our military, just the opposite. They are our greatest protectors. The greatest danger is the arrogance, accumulation, and use of power, wealth, and arms by the federal government against the people without regard to the states, and with the so far compliance of the states to be subordinate to the feds. Madison was right in the system of government and power balance he described in Federalist 46. So long as the conditions remained the same and the feds complied with the Constitution, they didn't. So the question for us is, are we, or will we, be at a point where the use of arms is necessary by the people for the security of free states and against the feds? Or is there another way, or many other ways? At Action Radio, we believe that we the people can change the conditions back to the system Madison described. But it's going to take a huge effort to take the unconstitutional powers, arms, and wealth from the feds to restore the system we should have had all along. A source for this report is federalistpapers.org. That's federalistpapers.org. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website, again, is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. Okay. Well, yeah, I think I've learned my lesson with, PragerU videos only being 5 minutes. I think the least I can do is keep them to less than that, like around 3 or 4. So that should have been 2 reports, but that's okay. You know, live and learn as we entered this grand and glorious experiment with Action Radio. I had all these articles set. Now I have a caller. So let me just do a quick check here and do that. I think I know who it is, but just to be on the safe side, let's take that one out. So, like I said, we're improvised radio today. I didn't get a chance to prep everything the way I normally do. I'm feeling actually better, so all that sleep was helpful, but it wasn't helpful right before the show when I needed some time to do some stuff here. It looks like we got Tom from Missouri, so let's bring Tom on. And, in fact, Tom is the caller that inspired that entire report, so it's kind of surprising to hear from him. Tom, what do you think?
Well, first, I appreciate that you actually read it. A lot of people read a couple of key lines out of that and then go off on that, and I'm glad you read the whole thing. I missed your show yesterday, and I was actually checking back, and I saw that you played that same thing yesterday. So I was kind of taking notes, and then I switched back and found out you're playing it again.
Well, I do it all week. Just to interrupt you for a second, just to let people know, the Santa Rosa Volunteers has commissioned me to do, like I say, these founding moments. So I will play I make one each week. And so I've got the introduction for how it works. So this is going to run all week. And then what I'll do is I'll have another one next week. And I haven't decided what I want to do yet. But, I've got such a wealth of things to choose from. But, you're the one who inspired it. So because we're podcasts, you don't have to catch the show live. You can catch the show anytime. And I will be playing this all week. And then I'll have another one for next week. But, yeah, feel free.
Okay.
Go for it.
I just want to clarify.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Okay. Feel free to clarify.
My big point was it's the states, not the people. A lot of people, especially your libertarian types, think it has to be private sector, and it's not. In fact, it's not supposed to be. During the election steal, what I was calling for was for the states to stand against it. At that time, it wouldn't necessarily take full-on kinetic power. It might be some of it, but there's a wide range. It's not just full-out war or bend over backwards or forwards or whatever. There's a range of efforts. If you have the states take an affirmative stance, you can affect a lot. And I was thinking, and I've been calling for this for years, because one of the reasons President Trump couldn't use the Insurrection Act was he had, the deep state. The military would not have followed his orders if he had done that. But if the states had offered the forces, here we are in Missouri, you want us to go take out this deep state whatever, we're here for you. And then, so there's a whole range of efforts approaches you could take with that.
Yeah, there's a range of questions too. Once you initiate that kind of force, how does it get controlled? When does it stop? And who's in charge? So I'm very, very careful when it comes to the use of force, especially within our domestic borders.
Yeah. The United States, Donald J. Trump.
Say that again.
That was the person you said who's in charge, that would have been President Donald J. Trump.
Well, I know, but even so, if you're having states, but individual commanders, it's like, you know, the general in Washington, you know, who initiates a battle, you know, somewhere in the world, you know, the field commanders are still issuing the direct orders. You know, so then you have to make sure that your field commanders are following the original orders, but they're still improvising. They're still, you know, making day-to-day orders depending on the combat situation. So, if you unleash force within the United States for a particular action, you know, it's the president can issue a directive, all right? And I don't like this is not an insurrection act. This is basically a criminal act. So we're not dealing with insurrectionists. We're dealing with thieves. And thieves don't require military force. Okay, so what we need to do is arrest the thieves, do an investigation of thieves. Think of the Democrat Party as like a mafia. Okay, so what we need is Rudy Giuliani. You know, you need the investigation, you need the arrest, you need the prosecution, you need the jail. That's how you handle what happened in the 2020 election. It's not a question of an insurrection.
Of course,
as soon as I'm done, I'm almost done. You know, but it's not an insurrection. I think, in other words, it's the wrong solution to the right problem, I think is the disagreement I have with what you're saying, which is fine, but that's how I see it. Okay, go ahead.
Well, a number of things, but two points. One is a smaller one. I was in the National Guard, and one thing I know, by going through the states, you can be much more selective. You know the people. You know that captain voted for Biden, that captain voted for Trump. Guess which captain gets the job of leading the assault?
See, you shouldn't know that.
You can be
if the ballot were secure.
Trust me. Everybody knew everybody's politics. Okay,
that's well, that makes sense.
We have a saying: it's the guard. It's a different critter entirely. And this is where I have to disagree with you. You said it's not an insurrection, and yet you have said in the past you call it the Biden insurrection.
Oh yeah, that's a convenient name I use. I mean, as opposed to administration.
I know, but you're dead on right. It is an insurrection, and it's an insurrection that's been going on since 2016. The deep state, the Russia investigation, all of that. It's all part of the same insurrection.
But it's not an insurrection in the sense that it's a military operation requiring a military solution. I guess that's where the difference is. I think it requires a legal solution.
People have gotten smarter over the centuries. They go for softer and softer coups because they know that a free society, quote unquote, doesn't like to go military against something like that. So the answer is not to give in, not to play their game, and to go military.
Where would you do that? How would you go military in this situation?
At what point in time? Like I said, I've been talking about this for years. If you go back to the election steal. Here's just a vision, and this is not complete and it's not perfect. Remember, there were like 17 states that challenged him in court. Those states, maybe a couple others, they issue a joint statement that this election is being stolen and that they will not recognize Joe Biden as president of the United States. They will only cooperate with the federal government on certain narrow things, national security and a couple other things.
Oh, see, I agree with that. I agree completely. They should have. Right. What they should have done is the state legislators should have recalled their Biden electors and said, no, we've got an ongoing investigation. This is where I look at it from the legal point of view. There's an ongoing investigation.
Those states aren't going to. I'm talking about the red states. I'm talking about the states that Trump won. So there's no recalling. They want their electors there. But that's a partial step. The thing is, they count on us not going kinetic when there are very lawful and ways, such as mentioned Phillips 46, it's part of our heritage. There are ways of doing it. The problem people think is that they want to make it all private. No, you do it through the government, through the state governments, as per the vision of the founders.
You don't need the military at this point, you know, and I agree with what you said, that the states, in fact, I've been calling for this, you know, since, you know, November 4th, that the states need to refuse to comply with an illegal administration, with an illegal insurrection, if you want, insurrection in office, that there's no reason to comply, especially with the ongoing investigation of these audits. This election isn't over. This election is still going on. It's going to be an ongoing process until they get through all the states that want to perform an audit And then we'll find out who really, we know who won, but then at least the process will have been done. And then whether we need the courts or not, depends on what happens. You know, if Biden willfully leaves knowing he's a fraud or he has to be forced out, that's what's going to get interesting. And if the courts don't do it, then it might get more interesting. Yeah. What's that?
There's only one way to force him out, and that's...
Well, no, a bunch of people can walk in and ask
him
to leave. I mean, we can do it the nice way. Yeah, yeah. But here's the thing, though. The states need to refuse. They need to withhold all tax dollars that they collect on behalf of the federal government. They need to refuse, you know, alleged mandates, especially unfunded mandates of the federal government. They need to kick the federal government officers out of their state. Okay, they need to close down FBIs and you know, various departments in energy and environment and education. They need to remove the federal government presence from their states. That would be a huge sign and a good way to do it. And we're still involving the military, but we're taking some very direct actions. Okay, if you deny the federal government access to your state,
speaking, it is military. Speaking, it is Phillips 46. No, whether it's it doesn't matter what the uniform is. The point is you're using a kinetic, which does not necessarily mean lethal. An arrest is kinetic. A lot of things are kinetic. I was in K4 in Kosovo, and we had kinetic versus non-kinetic means of dealing with things. Propaganda was kinetic. Arresting the guy was not. Well, propaganda was non-kinetic. Arresting the guy was kinetic. Bribes were non-kinetic, and there were other things that were kinetic I won't talk about. But,
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
but
what if they were
forcing people out? Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that, you know, we've never had a situation where states have forced, you know, where they've kept their money, where they've kicked federal government out. I even have a bill that states need to seize the states need to seize federal land within their states, particularly in Nevada. There's like 70% owned by the federal government. Federal government has nothing in the Constitution that allows them to own land in the state. Or control land in the state. It's just not there.
No, they can purchase land for military facilities and other.
Well, no,
other
that is authorized.
Buildings
yeah.
and that kind of thing.
Right. Okay, but I'm saying huge tracts of land.
They stretch it a lot. I will agree with you, but there is a provision there. So let's not.
Well, no, but I've read it. It's marine docks, you know, military installations, warehouses. You know, it's the land under them. You know, and the District of Columbia. Okay, so that I agree with you there. But the fact that they have, you know, massive test ranges and you know, BLM has huge amounts of land in states. So the federal government should not be able to control
test ranges
massive
or military
amounts of land.
Installation.
What's that?
Test ranges are military installations, so that would be covered.
Well, but I'm talking about the whole – well, Nevada is 70% federal government control. Do they need that? No.
How big of a bomb – remember, back in the 50s, we were setting off nukes out there.
Yeah, they were setting nukes off out there, yeah. Oh, no, I agree with you there. And the state of Nevada could say, okay, fine, we're going to give you – you know, instead of 70%, we'll give you 10%. You know, for your it's still a lot of land, you know. But they should be leasing that land from
the. Now the feds pay for the land, so Nevada would have to buy it back from them.
Well, how do they pay for the land?
I thought that's how the agreement. In other words, try that one again.
I don't think they paid for it.
How all that works?
I think they just took it with an act of Congress. I don't think they paid for it. And I don't think they pay Nevada money for the land that they use. I don't think so at all. No. We can look into that. It's an interesting topic. It's kind of off topic for today.
If they come in and try to take your land, they got to pay for it. That's eminent domain. They got to pay for it. Just compensation, Fifth Amendment.
Yeah, but who's to say that's fair market value? And if you don't want to sell, then, you know, I don't believe in eminent domain. If someone doesn't want to sell their property, then they don't want to sell their property.
It is in the Constitution.
I know.
It's
wrong. I disagree with that section. Yeah, I don't believe in eminent domain. I just don't.
Wrong? The Constitution is wrong, and that's
yeah,
fine to believe
wrong.
That, but it's still the Constitution.
Right. Okay.
Now,
and eminent domain goes on, but I don't agree with it. In fact, I was on a jury case. In fact, I was selected for a jury for an eminent domain case to establish fair market value for seizing property for some, you know, whatever project it was that they were doing. And I said to the judge, I said, look, I don't believe in eminent domain. You know, you don't have the right to take somebody's land. I said, the fair market value is what they want for their property. If you don't want to pay that, then it's not fair. And they threw me off the jury. But that's another story. I don't take too much longer on this because I want to get back to what's going on. This is the you're not ready for
just
Facebook vaccine report.
Let me make my final point, then I'll let you go.
Feel
please.
Free. Okay. Well, thank you. All right, go ahead.
yeah. The problem is the people. There's a reference in Psalms 46 about electing how people could elect a bunch of traitors that would cause the problem. Well, that's what happened. The problem is the people. And you have your issues with the Constitution. Remember, John Adams said it was for a moral and religious people. It's unfit for any other, inadequate. We need to replace the Constitution.
No, I wouldn't say that at all.
Try amending the hell
I just
out
don't
of
believe
it,
in eminent domain. I mean, there's so little that I disagree with. It's kind of funny. But that is one section that has never made sense to me because it's been used so badly. I mean, the Supreme Court had this decision where they took land for a shopping mall. And they just used
I remember.
It. And then they gave it
to
their friends.
I had to agree with them because that's what it says. They went with what it says.
Oh, yeah. Okay, then Congress needs to amend what it says, or at least, you know, redo
the states. Remember, the Congress can't amend what the Constitution says. It's just
sure
it
can.
You could go through do a 28th Amendment on it.
No, the Congress amends the Constitution, you know, throughout our history. That's where that's where I think all of our amendments came from. They came from Congress.
They started, but they have to be ratified by the states.
Of course they do, yeah. But what I'm saying is whether they start in the states and go to Congress or whether they start in Congress and go to the states, you still need both.
Because it sounded like a lot of people just say Congress passed the law, boom, it's amended.
No, it's a process.
I know. I would think you were smarter than that, but some people aren't.
I am smarter than that.
Make a last point.
I want to get back to I want to talk about the dangerous Dr. Fauci.
I got my point in. I thank you very much. Thank you for your attention to what I raised.
I appreciate
it. Have a good day.
You have a good day, too. All right. See the fun we have here? I'll be right back.
Action Radio. Part of the ADHD Radio Network. The ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.
See all the fun we have here? Such a great time. And just to let you know, callers do get a chance to call, even when they disagree with me, like both of my callers this morning. We're both wonderful people, both Tom and Josie. Great to have you on the show. I appreciate it. I found this is back to my favorite news source of information, Big League Politics. And this is from June 2nd. I've had this story hanging around for a little while, but it is something that is kind of forming in my brain here as something to really start investigating more and more and sort of connect the dots for you. And it says, revealed, Dr. Fauci, I got to pronounce that because it's in the article, right? Dr. Fauci plotted with Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg to push COVID-19 fear porn before the 2020 election. So let me do that again real slowly here. Dr. Fauci plotted with Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg to push COVID-19, and he actually says fear porn before the 2020 election. Fear porn. I've never heard the term fear porn before, but let's explore this a little bit. This is new email disclosures. Okay, this is, you know, all the stuff that the Washington Post, I mean, I can't believe it, the Washington Post investigates, you know, Dr. Fascist, right? It says new email disclosures obtained under the Freedom of Information Act, which is known as FOIA, F-O-I-A, Freedom of Information Act, have shown how National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, the NIAID, directed by Dr. Anthony Fascist, concluded with Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg, I'll think of a new name for him, to implement Orwellian thought control from the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. So let's put this into our timeline, into our evidence that it's always about vaccines, that it always was about vaccines, that it's about selling and marketing vaccines. The plandemic, as Judy Mikovits calls it, the plan that where they planned this pandemic to ensure that the sale of the vaccines with the lockdowns, with the masks, you know, and the fear component to make sure people take vaccines when we know that when they had the cure, You know, they had the cure the whole time. This could have been stopped in about 3 weeks. You know, a week of chloroquine or hydroxychloroquine cost about $20. All right. So if they'd only spent $20 per person in the United States for 2 weeks, let's say $40 a person, you know, for 2 weeks, which is a whole lot less than they actually ended up spending, this would have been done. And there would have been no pandemic, no masks, no lockdowns, no nothing, no fear, no problem with, well, they would have problems with the election, but I mean, none of the other stuff that went on, okay? None of the seizing of control by the mostly Democrat, but some Republican governors, including our own Governor DeSantis, that all of you want to canonize and make a saint, you know, Saint Dukakis, Saint DeSantis, you know, who can walk on water, who does no wrong, who's the most popular governor in the world right now, was someone I called Dictator DeSantis when he started off. He closed the beaches. He closed the schools. He had a safer at home order. He had a restriction that you were ordered to stay in your home, at which point I promptly went driving, played country music loudly out the window and sang with my windows down, driving. Okay. Since that safer at home order came out, I went driving. Okay. I'm sorry. You have to resist this kind of tyranny. And you resist it in any way you can. Had everybody else gone out driving, A, the roads would have been clogged, but B, they would have shown that they don't have control over us. Okay, so that's how you handle that kind of situation. So let's get back to the article here. During one exchange in February 2020, Zuckerberg asked Fauci about the best ways he could help with the synthesizing and mass distribution of a COVID-19 vaccine, offering to throw money and resources to the project through his foundation. Okay, you want to hear that again? During one exchange in February 2020, okay, so remember, February 2020, that's when we first learned about the cure. Late February 2020, I learned from Dr. Raoult in Marseille, France, and Dr. Zelenko here, well, I think Dr. Zelenko was maybe either March or April, that the cure for coronavirus or COVID-19 was chloroquine or later hydroxychloroquine. Hydroxy just means hydrogen and oxygen, okay? It's a molecule with some like water attached to it, all right? So water molecule attached. So that's what that's all about, all right? Well, maybe it's not water, but hydrogen and oxygen attached to the chloroquine molecule makes it hydroxychloroquine. Don't you guys remember high school chemistry? Didn't you study that stuff? Covalent bonds, ionic bonds, you know, don't you remember how this stuff works? Okay. So the thing about this, you know, talking about the best ways he could help with synthesizing and mass distribution. So in other words, Facebook is in the vaccine business, all right? That's what it comes down to. So this is why when you go on Facebook, you know, I always wondered why you saw every time there was a vaccine article post or mention, or even when I used to write memes, you know, type them out myself, they always had that vaccine, the COVID-19, you know, information. It started off, you know, vaccines are safe and effective, you know, and then they said vaccines have been tested thoroughly. And now they say vaccines are monitored closely. They keep watering down their warnings because they realize that what they're saying is wrong. It's been wrong the whole time. But I'm just learning about the connections between Facebook and the whole vaccine empire, all right? And so it makes sense that the control, and this came about with Event 201, you know, and here's what I learned. There's a doctor, Dr. David Martin, and I'm going to see if I can get him on the show. I should probably stop saying that because I'm trying to get everybody on the show. But Dr. David Martin, I was watching a recent video of him, and he was talking about Facebook, you know, funded Event 201. Wait a minute, wasn't the World Economic Forum? Well, apparently not. There's some group that I have yet to investigate called Open Philanthropy or something like that. Open Philanthropy is basically Facebook's, you know, shadow foundation where they donate, you know, billions of dollars to causes that they want to push. And one of the causes they're pushing is vaccines. So this is why you're all being censored, like I'm being censored. The biggest reason people are being censored from Facebook is for vaccine posts. Okay, so it's all connected. Now it makes sense. I say, why are they so into this? I mean, you know, of all the issues out there, I mean, you know, you can say, you know, Biden is a fake president. You don't get taken off for that. But if you say vaccines don't work, you're gone. Okay, so I'm going to continue on with this. Well, I should probably start the article from the beginning. You probably lost context. That made more sense. So let me just not interrupt and just get you some information. The article says new email disclosures obtained under the Freedom of Information Act have shown how the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease director, Dr. Fauci, colluded with Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg to implement Orwellian thought control from the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. During one exchange in February 2020, Zuckerberg asked Fauci about the best ways he could help with the synthesizing and mass distribution of a COVID-19 vaccine, offering to throw money and resources to the project through his foundation. Quote, I was glad to hear your statement that the COVID-19 vaccine will be ready for human trials in 6 weeks. Wait a minute, what? Are there any resources our foundation can help provide to potentially accelerate this or at least make sure it stays on track? And this is Zuckerberg asking Fauci. This is the email that didn't get reported in the national news from all the emails that came out, you know, about Fauci with the Washington Post. They didn't even miss this one, right? He said, if we start in April, 6 to 7 weeks from now, this is from the article, this is a quote, with a phase one trial of 45 subjects, it will take another 3 to 4 months to determine safety and some immunogenicity. I don't know what that is. The next step is a phase two for efficacy. We may need help with resources for the phase two trial if we do not get our requested budget supplement. I believe that we will be okay. If this goes off track, I will contact you. Many thanks for the offer. Much appreciated, Fauci said in response. I wish they'd said that earlier. So Fauci responds to Zuckerberg saying, you know, let me throw money at you, saying, well, now think about this for a second. This is where it gets really interesting, all right? Because he said, now this is, now think back, February 2020, we barely knew that there was even a, we're starting to hear, you know, this word COVID-19, you know, SARS-CoV-2, coronavirus. We don't really know what's going on. So I'll think back to where I was. February, it was the end, I remember very clearly because I'd just gotten over this bug. And I think, was that this coronavirus? Was this COVID-19? Did I already have it? Cool. Huh. I'm done. You know, so late December, early January. So by mid-January, you know, I'd gotten over what I was later to learn was COVID-19. I'm guessing because it was like a cough I've never had before. And I haven't had the antibody test. I could, you know, we'll see. Anyway, whatever it was, I had a bug. Everybody else had the same bug around here in Northwest Florida. We all got sick and we all got over it. And so then we came back, and then we start hearing about this COVID-19 in February. All right, so we get over it in January. You hear January, the end of January was when Trump banned travel from China. So he knew about it already. So end of January, Trump bans, you know, it's still coming out of my brain right now, so I'll make sure I get the timeline right. End of January, it's that. February, we're hearing more about it, and we're starting to hear, and this is when I said somewhere in middle, late February, I said, you know, what, why, and they're already talking vaccines. I said, wait a minute, the disease isn't even here, and they're talking about vaccines? You know, vaccines take, you know, years. I didn't know how many at that point, but I knew they took years. So I'm thinking, okay, well, this is kind of weird. I said, well, wouldn't it make more sense to kill this bug? I mean, if you're going to, you know, vaccines take years. You know, we don't have years. It's already here. So wouldn't a cure and wouldn't killing a virus be the best way to fight this thing? I mean, that's just simple logic, right? I mean, I'm no genius here, but it makes sense that if it takes 10 years to make a vaccine, you know, and you have a disease or a viral infection already here, you want to take measures to kill the virus or prevent you from getting it, okay? Well, then I learned shortly after that, near the end of February, I saw the Marseille study with Dr. Raoult that said that chloroquine kills COVID. I'm like, oh, great, we're done. You know, here's the cure, okay? So then I did a show March 2nd, elderberry, chloroquine, and something else I had, daylight savings time. It was just, you know, and to me, it wasn't that big a deal then. You listen to the show March 2nd last year, okay? It wasn't that big a deal because I knew we already had the cure. I did a show on, I think I did subsequent shows on how viruses can be killed. Okay. Well, viruses can be killed by fresh air, sunshine, ultraviolet, vitamin C, vitamin D, you know, various other things, chloroquine. I didn't know about ivermectin yet, but I learned about that actually many months later. But chloroquine I knew from the beginning. All right. So we knew how to kill this thing. And of course, I did a little bit more research. And I just put a little into my search engine. What kills viruses? Well, other viruses. Okay. Viruses prey on each other. Okay. There's a whole viral war going on that you don't even know about. Right? Probably in your own body. It's scary, huh? Right. And so you got this viral war going on. Viruses can be killed by drugs, you know, like chloroquine. Okay, viruses can be killed by viruses and drugs. All right, there are drugs that make good viruses kill bad viruses. You know, there are all kinds of things that go on. There are genetically, I guess, I don't know if they modify, redesign or something, but there are combinations of viruses and drugs. You know, this is fascinating. There are many ways to kill a virus. Okay, they're not that strong unless they're in your body and taking over it. And then they have, you know, trillions and trillions of viral cells. That's how they kill you, right? But it takes a whole lot to do it. If it's just a small amount, your body kills them. I mean, that's the whole idea. That's what an immune system is, all right? So I find this fascinating that they're focused so much on the vaccine, you know. And why do they focus on the vaccine? Money. Okay. This is all about money. This is a marketing scheme. I keep saying that, all right? And now the evidence is even stronger because what is Facebook? Facebook is a marketing project. You know, they take your information and they sell it to advertisers. Okay. That's the basis of Facebook. So it makes perfect sense that a marketing, you know, marketing meister Zuckerberg would take his marketing expertise and get it to Dr. Fascist, who wants to market his vaccine so they can both make billions and billions of dollars. Follow the money. This is what it's all about. It has always been. The plandemic has always been an exercise in marketing. And the fact that 500,000 people died is just, that's ancillary. You know, that's collateral damage. That's, stuff happens. Okay. That's how they look at this. Because the greater good, this is why you don't want the greater good. The greater good is we have a vaccine for humanity. Well, the real greater good is they have your DNA programmed with this messenger RNA crap. But here's what I find so fascinating. This is Dr. Fascist, who's talking about in February. Okay, so we haven't even the 15 days to slow spread was March. So here he is in February talking to Zuckerberg, saying in April, 6 to 7 weeks from now, with a phase one trial of 45 subjects. Now wait a minute, how the hell would they get? How could he forecast a phase one trial of a vaccine? Okay, follow me through on this, all right? You know, talking about that in February, you know, when Warp Speed hadn't even started, okay? And the reason is, I think, because they already had the vaccine long before Warp Speed started, okay? This is what makes sense to me. And how did they have it? Supercomputers. Moderna. Messenger RNA designed on computers. And how did they design the vaccine on computers? Well, because China released the gene sequence back in January of 2020. So they already had the gene sequence in January. In February, Zuckerberg and Fascist, Dr. Fascist, are talking about ways to market that vaccine. Moderna supercomputers probably already cranked out the messenger RNA formula within, what, days of getting that the code from China? So you can see the China fascist, Dr. Fascist, Facebook, World Health Organization, you know, cabal. It's not a conspiracy theory, folks. If someone says it's a conspiracy theory, play them this show. Okay? But you see how these are all connected. All right? So they already had – so how could Dr. Fascist be talking about vaccine trials for 6 to 7 weeks if he didn't already have the vaccine? Okay? He couldn't. He couldn't schedule trials for a vaccine he didn't know was when it was going to be developed. He could only schedule trials for when he did know when a vaccine was developed, because I think it was already developed by February of 2020. So the genes, so follow me through. Gene sequence comes out from China in 2020, January of 2020. Moderna runs it and plots it all out, and they create their vaccine in January of 2020. February of 2020, they decide how to market it. Okay, so the real engineering here is in the marketing of the vaccine. The vaccine itself was developed very quickly. Why? Because back in 2017, Dr. Zaks of Moderna had his TED talk where he said, we've hacked the software of life. So they already knew how to do it. So they knew how to create the vaccines back in 2017. So by 2020, it was easy to do it. They already knew how to do it. All they needed was a gene sequence, which was conveniently provided by China. Gee, what a surprise. Okay, so let me get back to the article. If we start in April, this is Dr. Fascist talking. If we start in April, 6 to 7 weeks from now, with a phase one trial of 45 subjects, so they're gonna bombard the world with these vaccines by testing 45 people. Okay, unbelievable. It will take another 3 to 4 months to determine safety and some immunogenicity. I don't know what that word means. So somebody call me up. The next step is phase two for efficacy. I guess that's like, you know, potency. We may need help with resources for the phase two trial if we do not get our requested budget supplement. That would be Warp Speed. Okay, I bet you when Dr. Fascist was talking about his budget for the phase two trials, I believe that was Operation Warp Speed, and that's why they convinced Trump that he had to pay for all this money to develop a vaccine very quickly, knowing damn well they already had it developed, and they just took the money for the trials, okay, and themselves. That's what I think is going on. So the Warp Speed money, Trump was lied to. All right, I can't prove it, but I think this is how it went down, all right, that he was lied to and that they got the money from Warp Speed to do their own trials for a vaccine they'd already developed. All right. Fascinating, huh? We don't get a requested budget supplement. I believe that we'll be okay if this goes off track. Oh, if this goes off track, I will contact you. Define off track, Dr. Fascist. Many thanks for the offer. Much appreciated, Fauci said in response. Okay. Let me just go on with the article. A couple of weeks later, Zuckerberg approached Fauci again with a proposal to do propaganda on his behalf in order to make sure the public was properly conditioned with fear over the COVID-19 virus. Wow. Think about that for a second. I got to play something for you here. That's let me do my alert. All right. So y'all ready? Here we go. A couple of weeks later, Zuckerberg approached Fauci again with a proposal to do propaganda on his behalf in order to make sure the public was properly conditioned with fear. Properly conditioned with fear over the COVID-19 virus. Okay. Now, why would you have to condition people with fear? Well, to make sure they buy the vaccine, of course, to make sure they tolerate the lockdowns, make sure they don't resist going, you people are full of you know what. That's what this is all about. It has always been a marketing campaign. The lockdowns, the masks, all the businesses that closed, all the dictatorial power of the governors and the mayors that they had no right to that they took anyway, all of this stuff. Well, actually, they've been doing it for control. But Dr. Fascist and Zuckerberg here, you know, marketing meister, it was all about money. They're basically marketers. Dr. Fascist and Zuckerberg are marketers. That's what they are. You know, oh, yeah, I'm sure, you know, even though Dr. Fascist has a medical license, and I'm sure, you know, Zuckerberg has some kind of college degree, basically what they are is marketers, all right? Let me see who did this quote. Oh, here's another quote from, I wish they put the quotes up front. So I'll just read you the quote and then we'll see. Here we go. It says, I wanted to send a note of thanks for your leadership and everything you're doing to make our country's response to this outbreak as effective as possible. Country's response to this outbreak as effective as possible. Well, yeah. Well, if you want to make it as effective as possible, you should have got chloroquine in everybody's hands. But we've talked about that. He says, I also wanted to share a few ideas of ways we could help you get your message out. But I understand you're incredibly busy, so don't feel a need to reply unless these seem interesting. Zuckerberg explained how this is Zuckerberg talking. Okay, good. Zuckerberg explained how his platform was going to serve as Big Brother to restrict all information about COVID-19 that had not been approved by the big pharma cartel. You get that, folks? Let me try that again. This is why we're all being censored on Facebook. All right. This is why, you know, all my vaccine posts, all my posts on the deaths from the vaccine and all the information that we do and the research on messenger RNA, everything that goes on, and all the posts on Moderna and Dr. Fascist, all those things cause massive censorship. This is why Zuckerberg explained, this is from right from the article, how his platform was going to serve as Big Brother to restrict all information about COVID-19 that had not been approved by the big pharma cartel. You got that? Okay. That's why you see that little note at the bottom of every post that has the word vaccine in it. They automatically tag on this, you know, COVID-19 vaccines are effective and then tested thoroughly and then monitored closely. I don't know what the next one's going to be, but they keep watering it down. Here we go. This is Zuckerberg again. Quote, this isn't public yet, but we're building a coronavirus information hub that we're going to put at the top of Facebook for everyone. And that's over 200 million Americans, 2.5 billion people worldwide. Okay. Actually, they put it at the bottom. But anyway, we're going to put at the top of Facebook for everyone, you know, with two goals. All right. So 200 million Americans use Facebook, 2.5 billion people worldwide. That's power. Okay. The two goals are, one, make sure people can get authoritative information from reliable sources, in other words, those that they agree with, and two, encourage people to practice social distance and give people ideas for doing this using internet tools. This will be live within the next 48 hours. He wrote this, and this is Zuckerberg writing this in an email in March of 2020. You get that? March of 2020. They had the vaccine. They had the marketing strategy. They had the money. They had the whole thing in place. So by the time this 15 days to slow the spread came around, all the machinery was there. Don't forget also, they changed the guidelines, the CDC guidelines back in 2017 when Trump took office. 3 months after he takes office, they get rid of the pandemic severity index. And that's the thing that graduated the response to a pandemic. They got rid of the pandemic severity index and made it so that the new guidelines, they could go to full lockdown immediately. Well, so this is why I knew they were going to do this back in 2017, okay? Because why else would you change the guidelines? Why would you get rid of the pandemic severity index if you weren't planning on locking down, you know, the entire society all at once, the entire country all at once, okay? Because you couldn't under the old guidelines, so they made new guidelines where they could. It all fits. Hydroxychloroquine, the cure, suppressed so they could sell vaccines. The pandemic severity index, removed so they could lock down immediately so they could sell vaccines. So they could put the fear that this article talks about into, so Zuckerberg So Zuckerberg is basically the Joseph Goebbels here. All right, he's the in the ministry of if you look at the old Nazi regime. All right, Zuckerberg would be the Joseph Goebbels, the minister of propaganda, the one that controls the information, the one that censors people that they're saying the wrong information according to what they want. All right, so anybody that challenges the information, of course, in the old days they just line you up against the wall and shoot you. Now they basically assassinate your character. Okay, so they've gone from actual assassination to assassination of your character. And that's what cancel culture is all about. Okay, so the minister of propaganda would be Goebbels. Dr. Mengele would be Dr. Fascist. The actual medical doctor that does the horrible experiments on people, comes up with this amazingly disgusting stuff that the Nazis did in the concentration camps and the death camps to people. That was Dr. Mengele. So you've got Joseph Goebbels and you've got Dr. Mengele right here reincarnated in Mark Zuckerberg and Anthony Fauci. So what's the difference? Germany killed, millions upon millions of people, okay? Well, how many people have died of COVID worldwide? Now, is it the same scale? Not quite, okay? We lost 500,000 Americans. Well, here's an interesting thing. Did we lose more Americans to COVID or to World War II? The answer is simple. COVID, by far, by like three times as much, okay? Fascinating stuff. Let me take a quick break here. And what do I want to play for you now? I'll play a couple minutes of stuff. Let me think here. I don't lighten up too much because we're in a serious mood here. So let me play you something. Let's do my book. So take a break, breathe, think about all I've just said. I'll finish the article when I come back. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. All right, let's get going again here. Action Radio. Dangerously cool. I got about 7 minutes left, so if you want to comment, feel free, now's the time, but a little bit more of this article to go. So let's continue on. This would be, I guess, Zuckerberg here. It says, as a central part of this hub, I think it would be useful to include a video from you because people trust and want to hear experts rather than just a bunch of agencies and political leaders. This could be done in a number of formats if you're open to it. Probably the best would be recording a Q&A where you answer people's top questions, but we'd be open to other formats too. Well, think about that. Wasn't it shortly after March, or actually during late February, early March, that Dr. Fascist appeared everywhere, that he gave a briefing everywhere, that he was with the coronavirus task force every day for hours? Okay. And here you go. Zuckerberg basically marketed Dr. Fascist to the country, at Trump's expense. So Trump's pushed off to the side there just to sort of look like a useful idiot. This is when Zuckerberg and Dr. Fascist and all these folks took over the government, basically. This is Trump's biggest mistake. And not only did it cost lives, I think to a large extent it cost, his administration. It certainly cost control of the economy. It cost, untold damage to this country. By this is where he should have fired Fascist, gotten rid of him. They never should have had that coronavirus task force. They didn't need it. Because this would have been easily cured in a few weeks with the right stuff, okay? But they didn't do it. So here we go. So here's what Fauci says in response. He says, your idea and proposal sound terrific. I would be happy to do a video for your hub. That'd be Facebook. We need to reach as many people as possible and convince them to take mitigation strategies seriously or things will get much, much worse, Fauci said in response. Mitigation, that's social distance, that's masks, that's things like that. He said, in addition to performing propaganda on behalf of Dr. Fauci, Zuckerberg also staffed Facebook with veteran Democrat operatives and funded crucial election infrastructure for a 2020 election marred with allegations of cheating and improprieties. Okay, now we've talked about that before. That's where Facebook went in and donated millions upon millions of dollars to Democrat districts, you know, to get out the vote, to influence election laws, to get, you know, so in many respects, Zuckerberg threw the election. Single-handedly. I mean, he has a huge, you know, impact on this, an imprint on it. And so one of the people that have to be investigated, not only the entire Democrat Party, but Zuckerberg needs to be hauled in. He should be in jail too, probably, for his not only just election fraud, but fraud in the COVID fraud. Now, I'm not sure what the crime is yet. I don't know what you'd exactly call that when you convince a nation to take a vaccine they don't need simply so you can get rich. I mean, you know, I don't know what that comes under. I'll ask Jonathan Mosley, he's our legal person, what exactly that would be. But when you think about it, that's what happened. So you get Zuckerberg marketing Dr. Fascists, you know, and then closing off all information. They talked about this in Event 201, which apparently Facebook sponsored, as I'm learning. Okay. So one of the things they talked about in Event 201, the rehearsal for the plandemic, plandemic's a real word, by the way, the planned pandemic, that's what plandemic is. Okay. So they talked about controlling the information so no bad information got out. And you look at the media, anybody that says hydroxychloroquine is good is gone or was gone last year. Now it's changing. One American News is actually brave enough to do that. I don't know if anybody else is. I really don't watch much other news because I don't need the propaganda. All right. So where you know, if you take Zuckerberg's marketing, you take Dr. Fascist's, you know, illegalities, you take Moderna's, you know, genetic code vaccine, they're all in this together, all right? So how this works out, we're going to find out. So let me just get the last little bit here. We've got about 4 minutes left. It says Big League Politics reported on how the Zuckerberg cash enforced compliance among bought-off Republicans, oh my, the gelding old party, who turned a blind eye to the electoral fraud when it mattered the most. So really what you got here is both the vaccine scandal and the election scandal are really two parts of the same scandal. Okay. And this is what's going to get complicated as we try to unravel. And that's why Wednesdays, I think, are so important to Action Radio, is because we put these together. We put the vaccine scandal and the election scandal together, and hopefully it'll make more sense to you as we go. Here's a quote here from, I'm not sure, Facebook. Here we go. This is the office of Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, little toady he is defending the payout of over $5 million from a group backed by Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg to fund election infrastructure in the state. Well, you know what that election infrastructure is, don't you? Okay? Those are the mailboxes, the mailed-out ballots, the fraud. He's funding the fraud. He's funding the election fraud. That's what they're talking about. They're not funding election infrastructure. And so they bought off Raffensperger. They bought off Brian Kemp, the governor. They bought off so in other words, the Democrats were already corrupt. So you didn't have to buy them off, although I'm sure they received their payouts too. So you buy off the cheap, sleazy Republicans. You know, the traitor Republicans, you empower the cheap, sleazy, corrupt, you know, traitorous Democrats, you know, so to steal the election. It's amazing that the Trump got any votes when you think about it. Last little bit here. The Washington, D.C. based Center for Education, Elections, excuse me, the Washington, slow down, Greg. The Washington, D.C. based Center for Election Innovation and Research, CEIR, donated almost $5.6 million to the Georgia Secretary of State's office. Really? Who donates to government offices? They apparently received a tremendous return on their investment, as Raffensperger did nothing except obstruct after the suspicious results were reported from polling centers manned by Democrats who were captured on video tape violating election law. Raffensperger spokesman Walter Jones boasted in an email comment for Georgia Star News that Zuckerberg's money has given them the ability to crush dissent, calling for investigations into election fraud. So Zuckerberg is paying government officials to stop the audits, to stop the investigations. So who does Raffensperger and Kemp and all these corrupt, traitorous Republicans, who do they owe their allegiance to? The people that elected them? No, they owe their allegiance to Zuckerberg, who's paying them millions of dollars to basically sell out their country and sell out the election. That's what's going on here. And why was this all important? To sell vaccines and make money. So then you have this, you know, as I call it, the Biden insurrection. So you have you have the fake person in the White House who keeps Dr. Fascist on. What a big surprise! I mean, aren't you shocked that Dr. Fascist is still there coordinating things and keeping his investments secure? That's his job now. His job is to keep the vaccine investment secure for either his masters at Big Pharma or his partners at Big Pharma. I haven't quite decided which one yet. You know, is he a pimp or a prostitute for Big Pharma? He is a genocidal, psychopathic drug pusher. That I'm convinced of. But so whether he's a pimp or a prostitute for Big Pharma, I haven't quite figured out yet. Or he's a director of Big Pharma on the government side. In other words, the two parts of the same thing. There's more to this article. Unfortunately, I only have 20 seconds left. Read it for yourself. Big League Politics, you know, June 2nd, 2021. Revealed. The title is Dr. Fauci plotted with Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg to push COVID-19 fear porn before the 2020 election. You know, the ultimate irony of this is I can't post this on Facebook. The ultimate irony is I cannot post this article that I just read on Facebook. With that, I'll leave you until tomorrow. Greg Fangles here for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. You can also support us at patreon.com/actionradio. And you can listen to Action Radio anytime. You don't have to listen on your computer. Just get that cell phone, connect it to your vehicle audio. You know, put Action Radio on your browser and off you go. Action Radio. See you tomorrow morning, 7 o'clock Central Time. With another exciting adventure.